the night to our Tuesday night celebration of life. For those of you who've been with us for the last few weeks, you know that we are now getting ready to start with the first quality of an intentional creator, connection with people. Last week we were talking about self-esteem and some of the challenges that want to yank us out of the observer's chair, if you will, and put us over in that chair over there, trapped by our unhealthy habits of thinking. And some of those things are unmet expectations, the comparison game, traumatic events, secrets. And we started the process of becoming aware of what might damage our self-esteem. And after we have an understanding of this and we've raised our awareness so that we can hear it, we now start with quality number one, and we're going to begin the process that's going to take us all the way back to self-esteem. We're going to work with connection with people, and then we're going to go to mental creation, use our mind constructively to get inspired ideas and impressions and solutions to challenges, ignite our passion, and drive our actions. And then we're going to step into passion-driven action. Then we're going to take on all of those thought processes that get in the way, our resistance and resentments and rebellions. And then we're going to start finding joy in our journey and ultimately healing in our self-esteem. So tonight we're going to take on this idea of connecting with people, this principle that Og called the greatest secret of success in all ventures. He tells us that muscle can split a shield and even destroy life. We can be forceful. But he says that only love is going to open up the hearts of men. Until I master this art, I'm no more than a peddler in the marketplace. Now, we've got some extensive information in the Intentional Creation Studio. Each one of you have one. You go to your assessment report, log on to augmandino.com, log in with your username and password, go to your assessment results, and in that navigation it says Creation Tools. You click on your Creation Tools. That takes you to a wealth of information on each one of these qualities. Quality number one, you click on quality number one, and it breaks it down into several pieces that you can click on any one of those pieces, and the Learning Center will open up, and you get to study this section in greater detail. I'm going to give you some things to focus on tonight, and hopefully we'll go deeper than we ever have before in the topic of connection with people. I'd like to have this open line. If you have any noise in the background or conversations or you're doing the dishes or anything, just press star 6 to mute the call. Then when you want to come back on to participate, just press star 6 again. Call out my name, and when I hear your name, I will acknowledge you. This is your coaching session. This is an opportunity for us to extend, for many of you, what was personal coaching or a group coaching session, so that we can take these principles and drive them deeper into our lives. We know that when we practice them, they bring us joy. And the greatest thing that happens in our coaching program is what happens in between the sessions. In between the sessions. I want to set you up perfectly for this week. Now, it's interesting that when we come back through this section, we often find ourselves repeating some of the principles, and that's true. I want to spend a little time tonight on the six measurements of connection and go just a little bit deeper. If you've got a paper and a pen handy, I want to introduce you to a little bit of the science behind the assessment to bring some richness to each one of these measurements. Dr. Robert S. Hartman at the Hartman Institute, University of Tennessee, made an incredible discovery. He discovered that our thought processes occur in three different dimensions. Three different dimensions. In the first dimension, we're thinking about things that are beyond value or concepts that are beyond value. In the case of connection with people, we're talking about all of these kinds of thought processes. It's people. People are beyond value. In your assessment, to the right of connection with people is self-esteem. It's exactly the same mathematics, but applied to you, applied directly to you. So here we are, left-hand side, all of these thought processes are thought processes about people, things that are beyond value. I don't want to trip anybody up tonight, but if you want to have some fun, write the word intrinsic, I-N-T-R-I-N-S-I-C, intrinsic. It means beyond value, beyond value. That's what we're looking at. Our question is, can we accurately, our intuition, is it accurate in our assessment of another human being? Because there are six ways in which we analyze a human being. And everything that we do when we're looking at a human being and considering that person's value fits into one of these six areas. Now, we'll go to some narrow definitions, but they can expand. For an example, the very first question is, we're looking at this human being, this intrinsic concept, this thing beyond value. Everybody just imagine a person in front of you. I have the pleasure of sitting here looking at my sweetheart, Ramona, who's taking notes for your potential creation studio. Here's this priceless human being. Can I see her for her pricelessness? Can I value her, not based on appearance or performance or a belief system, but just on her pricelessness? Can I see that piece? That's the first measurement in the assessment. This has more mathematical value than the other 17 measurements on the left-hand side. This one measurement alone. That's pretty powerful. Very significant measurement. Because if we are not seeing this person, either I'm so focused on myself, or I've had a traumatic event in my life, and I'm just holding back a little bit. I'm not focused on them. I'm more focused on how I'm feeling about being vulnerable, being available. I might be suffering from people fatigue. I might be struggling with we've got a conversation going on in the background. If you could press star 6, that would be so helpful.
Good.
Thank you. So I am empathetic. I possess a deep and profound reverence for the infinite worth of every human being. I value each person as unique and irreplaceable. Now imagine in terms of connection, if we did not have this thought process in balance. What's the likelihood that we would stop and listen and step into their world and take down their walls of resistance if we're not seeing their pricelessness and uniqueness? This is the measurement that allows us to care about another person. Empathetic. Empathy means to stand on someone's path. The EM means to stand on pathy, stand on someone's path. Can I care enough to stand on their path and see life through their eyes and address their needs based on what they need? That's why I am empathetic. Hope everybody's okay with me going into the math like that. We could take you into Cantor's transfinite calculus and show you the actual mathematical symbols for a human being. It's something beyond price to the power of something beyond price. I mean, it's the most amazing calculation in the universe as a human being. Do we view human beings as that priceless? Number two, now I'm looking at Ramona, this priceless, intrinsic concept, this person. And I'm going to value her based on all of her physical attributes, her appearance, her possessions, her contributions, her accomplishments. Can I see the value in each one of those things? I am respectful. I recognize and appropriately acknowledge the value of a person's appearance, possessions, accomplishments, talents, and contributions. Now, we're going to be connecting with this person. We want to be able to step into their world and take down their walls of resistance. However, I may have a thought process, and 92% of you do, that wants me to be over-focused on how she looks, all those physical attributes. This is when respectful turns orange or red. I'm over-focused on her outward appearance. I just want you to be with this for a moment, because I'm going to do one of two things when that happens. The two most common risks. She looks so capable, so put together, that I could create an expectation for how she would perform based on how she looks. Now, some of you do that with people when you're listening to this thought process. You probably have been sorely disappointed when someone shows up less than that, unless you were with Ramona. She smiled. The other option is that I'm with this human being. I'm focused on her appearance, and Ramona's very stately and very gracious and very kind. Now, if someone feels less than, they might actually be intimidated by that just a little bit at first, until they got to know her. Then they would know there's no barriers here. But at first, they might be just a little intimidated. If you're in a business where you will want to connect with another human being, ask yourself, do I have a list of people that I want to connect with that make me uncomfortable? We call this a chicken list. I just want you to see, you're looking at the person and valuing them based on these external features. See, they don't need what I need or have. They wouldn't want what I have. They look so okay, they don't need anything extra. They look healthy. They look wealthy. And here's the truth. Hardly anything is as it appears. Hardly anything is as it appears. We're going to want to know how to, without intimidation for appearance and or expectation for appearance and or the possibility of not being focused on their appearance and missing opportunities to acknowledge it, we're going to want to instead learn how to listen differently. Listen differently. And step into this person's world. Get beyond outward appearances into their heart and find out what's really important. Take down their walls of resistance. Unleash their cooperation and productivity. This is so important for many of you on the phone, 92%. This one valuation of a human being gets in your way all the time. And especially when, if you've got your assessment handy, you'd go over to the right-hand side, right even with respectful, over there to confident, take a look at the measurement. Is it orange or red? Am I devaluing myself in terms of my appearance, my possessions, my skills, my education? If so, we're just making it even worse, because we're coming feeling a lot less than. Now we're putting them on a higher pedestal, and we're increasingly uncomfortable, sweaty palms, dry mouth, strange comments. What an interesting challenge. So we're looking at this human being in terms of appearance. Now we can evaluate another person in another way. Let's look at this human being. They've got a whole belief system. They've got ideas. They've got opinions. Am I accepting? I honor people for being dedicated to their beliefs and values, and I support their right to have their own ideas and opinions. Can I let them have their ideas and opinions without being threatened? Can I see the good in those ideas? When I see this person, what are my risks? If I've got an orange or a red acceptable, I'll just share them with you and see if this makes any sense. If I have been burned in the past, someone professes to believe a certain way, and it turns out they act a different way, which, by the way, no one ever honors 100% of what they believe. That would be a perfect person. So we're all going to fall short. And if we've had that happen, we may be looking at this person, and in terms of their beliefs, we may be doubting whether they're genuine, whether they're sincere, whether they're telling the truth. We call this the Wizard of Oz measurement, where we are looking at this person, and unlike Dorothy and the Scarecrow and the Straw Man and the Lion and the Tin Man are up there looking at Oz and being intimidated, Toto just goes over and pulls back the curtain. He wants to know what's really behind the scenes. This is a Toto measurement. We pull back the curtain because I know that's what they say, that's how they look, but I want to know how they really believe. What do they really believe? Well, here's the risk. When we look at a person from this perspective, what are the chances if we're looking for something wrong, we'll actually find it? I've done this with some of you before, but if you'll take your hands, put them out to your left and right, and wiggle your fingers, look straight ahead, wiggle your fingers so you can see them in your peripheral vision. On the left-hand side represents everything good about the person. On the right-hand side, everything that's a problem in terms of their belief systems. I want you to turn your head to the left, look at your fingers, and say, gosh, I'm looking at what's good. Can I see what's bad? No. Now turn your head all the way to the right and look at what's bad. And ask yourself if you can see what's good. The risk with this measurement, we are either going to be seeing just the good and be terribly naive, or we're just going to see the bad and be judgmental. If we get an orange measurement. However, if it's green or blue, we're more aligned with looking straight ahead and seeing the entire spectrum. This is so important when we're valuing a human being, that we don't get caught in the habit of being judgmental. One, we'll get inaccurate information. What we don't know, is there something good offsetting that which we're seeing? Or is it a real red flag we need to be aware of? I am accepting. The other risk is this. You know when someone's judging you. You just know. It's because our mirror neurons read all their facial expressions, send messages to the brain, chemicals released in the body before we have a conscious thought. A conscious thought, we're feeling uncomfortable. And the same is true of another person. We cannot be judging them and connecting with them. It doesn't work. Well, those are the top three. Now let's go a little deeper. With empathetic, I'm valuing this human being based on their pricelessness. Respectful, based on their appearance. Accepting, based on their belief systems. Now I'm going to take a look at this person in terms of belief systems, socioeconomic, political, religious, belief systems that could be harmful. Belief systems very different than my mind, than mine. Can I see the risks in connecting with this human being? Now, many of you have this measurement, orange or red. When I am tolerant, I'm accepting of people who may have different beliefs, values, ideas, or opinions. I treat people fairly and appropriately, even when they don't fit into my social, political, or cultural norms. I can see this all in balance. The risk is for many of you, when you see a person whose belief systems are different than yours, that makes them an underdog. That's the key, an underdog. For example, they may not understand and believe that there's a relationship between effort and results. They may be takers. And all of a sudden, we see someone who needs a little extra money, so we give it to them. There's nothing wrong with that. But if we don't see the risk, they'll come back for just a little bit more, and then just a little bit more, and then just a little bit more, until we have no more to give. And when we say, I have no more to give, they get angry with us. Who do we think we are? We live in a nice house, you drive a nice car, surely you've got money for me. That's the risk. If anybody on this phone has saved underdogs, you know what I'm talking about. When we want to save someone more than they want to be saved, we are going to get burned. Now, it doesn't mean we don't give, because you'll want to be generous. It just means that before you give, be fully aware of the risks related to giving. For an example, so tolerant. I'll be tolerant of, but don't be naive about, because that naivety will get you into trouble. Tolerant. I am just and fair. This is a big one. Many of you, 90%, have this one orange. Just and fair is, I'm now looking at this person and I'm considering those things that aren't working. For an example, they're not performing well. They're overweight, they're out of shape, they're too tall, they're too short, they're too bald, they're too something that's out of the ordinary. I'm still dealing with appearance, but now I'm dealing with appearance that may actually be taking away from their value. How do I handle this? We have chosen in our definition to focus mainly on performance, because that's most of the time when we see this one out of balance. It's about another person's performance. So here's the example. I'm looking at this person. They do something, and it frustrates me. Am I clear enough to address that challenge in the moment? Or am I going to minimize that issue? Am I going to be more worried about not wanting to hurt their feelings than addressing this challenge? This is a conflict for many of you on the phone, because we think it's being kind from a religious perspective, being Christ-like. There is nothing further from the truth. When someone is performing inappropriately and we are not clear and communicate those concerns, we are in fact giving approval to that performance. It's like having a gunny sack in your left hand. I've shared this with some of you before, but now in this perspective, I've got a gunny sack in my left hand, this infraction in the right. They just did something. I'm looking at it going, oh, I don't want to cause more stress. I don't want to hurt their feelings. I don't want them to be worrying. And so I stick the infraction in my gunny sack. They do something again, and I stick their infraction in my gunny sack. They do it again. I stick their infraction in my gunny sack. And eventually I reach a point where my gunny sack is full. What impact is this having on my ability to connect with this person? Let's say, for an example, they're an employee or they're a member of a team or a downline in a network marketing company, and they're continually underperforming when they say they will and they don't. And I'm dealing with this infraction. I'm depending on them to show up. Maybe they're helping with a meeting, or this employee's got a report that's due, and every time it's due, it's late. There are other things they may do well, and because of that, I don't want to lose them, so I stick their infraction in my gunny sack. What happens when the gunny sack's full? Anybody want to jump out on the phone? What do we generally do when that gunny sack is full? Anyone? No one's going to indict you for your answer.
Cry.
What was that? We cry, yeah.
Humble.
What was the second one? I'm sorry.
Crumble.
Go ahead.
Crumble,
yeah. Yeah, crumble. We
I
can
go the
crumble.
Other way.
We just
I
kind
blow up.
Blow up, thank you. We got both of them. So we got cry and crumble and blow up. So we cry.
Give up.
Give up. Yeah. We give up. We give up or we blow up. Can we just take those two directions? Because giving up has crying in it. It has crumbling in it. So we give up or we get angry. If we give up, we just abandon it. This happens in relationships all the time. Somebody reaches a point they can't take it anymore. And they just leave. The other side is blow up. Now watch blow up, because blow up's really fun to watch. Well, it's not fun to watch. It's fun to reflect on, because we've all blown up at one time or another. And you take the gunny sack full of infractions. They're infractions. And we dump it out on the table all in one big fell swoop. And what do we get back in response? Why are you so emotional? All I said was. All I did was. Because the only thing on their mind is the last infraction. Because when we don't communicate clearly, we give approval. It's called tacit approval. It's as if we approved it. We approve the previous behavior. We can enable people to do some really crazy things. And sometimes it's teenagers. Sometimes it's a companion. Sometimes it's an employee. Sometimes it's whomever. But it impedes connection, because while this drama is going on, how hard is it to step into someone's world, listen to them, ask empathetic questions, and show up totally focused on them when we're dragging around this resentment in a sack, especially if it's rather full. We're going to want to know that agape love, this connection that we talk about, this intrinsic validation, is not about naive kindness. It is about clarity. It is about being crystal clear and communicating clarity. Now, if we address infractions as they come, we'll be less emotional than if we dump a gunny sack. We also can stop some of that behavior or address it to a point that other decisions can be made. Now, I find a lot of executives with this measurement, Justin Fair Orange. This is the statement: I set clear and appropriate boundaries. I accurately assess a person's poor performance and keep the reasons for any lack of performance in proper perspective. You know, if someone's late one morning, you don't want to chop their toes off. You do, and then you find out later that their son fell off the counter this morning and had to have 3 stitches, and that's why they were late. Oh, my goodness, we'd feel awful. At the same time, if they're late every single day, that's a different issue. We want to keep reasons for poor performance in proper perspective. In other words, are we expecting more out of them than they're capable of delivering? And if we keep putting an expectation on them and their poor performance, that lack of performance, keeps showing up, it may be us too. So it's not just climbing down their throat, so to speak, about what they've done wrong. It's to step back and hold this in proper perspective to truly understand it, and then take the appropriate actions. That's clarity. That's agape love. Jack Welch wrote a book. He was the CEO of GE. Jack Welch wrote a book called Winning. And he has a process in there where at the end of each year, the top 20 get highly rewarded. The next 70 are the bread and butter, and the last 10% are cut off. They're fired every year. Boom, done. Some people think that's harsh. But the truth is, whenever we finally let somebody go, when we've got this measurement orange, the one thing we most almost always say, whether it's a relationship, or whether it's an employee or a former partner, we almost always say, why did I wait so long? I should have done that sooner. Rarely does the waiting get justified. Rarely. So let us be clearer, because this really impedes connection. Last one. I am compassionate. Now, this word's an interesting one to understand. We've chose it very carefully. Passionate means a willingness to suffer for something we love. Compassion is a willingness to suffer with someone we love. And the question is, do I care enough about others to set aside my personal agenda, step into their world, actively listen, acknowledge their challenges, and create a safe place for connection and healing? Can I see their challenge? If we're connecting with another human being, we are totally focused on them. We step into their world and we listen. Now, they may be suffering from the proverbial blister on their toe. We may have a broken ankle. And the risk is when this turns yellow is I'm having a hard time focusing on their blister when I've got a broken ankle. It's that kind of a challenge. But this isn't about our ankle. This whole section is totally about being available to serve them. That's why it's so important as we work on this to heal our self-esteem. Because the more our self-esteem is clear and accurate, the more available we don't have to worry about us. We're so okay, we can absolutely show up for another human being. Compassion just says, if it's orange in your assessment, I got a lot going on in my life. There's some painful things going on. It's hard to see somebody else's challenges unless they're more complicated than my own. Then I can see them. And the invitation is for us to not make it about us. Make it about them. Step into their world and see their challenge, no matter how small it is in relationship to ours. Because the only thing that matters is how important it is to them. Compassion. Can I see this piece? So, we can name any way we value a human being, and it's going to fit into one of these six ways. These are big rooms. But if we've got any orange or red, and again, it's most common, I am respectful and I am just and fair, we're going to want to practice these principles of intrinsic validation with a new level of enthusiasm and intention. Because as we practice them, and I'm going to walk through them with you, as we practice them, we will start to override these thought processes. And every time we override them and think differently, we're creating a new neural pathway in our mind. We think differently, we think differently, we think differently, till pretty soon that is how we are thinking. And the brain prunes off our old habit of being too focused on outward appearance, about coming up with all kinds of dialogue to avoid confrontation, because I want to hurt feelings. We start to become more whole and complete and confident. And we care enough about that person to speak the truth, because their life is not going to go well until we do, nor is ours. So let's walk through these principles. Agape means a heightened level of awareness, which means I'm going to step back from all of my unhealthy habits of thinking, because I can. I'm going to sit here in the observer's chair, and I'm going to see this person in all these six ways. I'm going to see their pricelessness. I'm going to see the value in their appearance and possessions. I'm going to see the value in their belief systems. I'm going to see the risks in any belief systems that are dangerous or harmful. I'm going to keep in proper perspective any lack of performance. And I'm going to see the challenges that they're having so that I can serve them. I'm going to, with agape, see those pieces. That's the purpose for agape. Is so that these six areas of intuition are functioning properly. That's why I'm practicing agape. I'm going to bring this empathy, this standing on their path, and this intuition, this gut feel, this inner sense of knowing, I'm going to bring to the table. And I'm going to use it to take down their wall of resistance. So write down the word agape. Heightened level of awareness. It helps me to heighten my empathy and intuition so that I'm overriding any unhealthy habits of thinking. I'm balanced in all these areas sitting here in the observer's chair. And I'm going to take down their wall of resistance. Everybody's got one. We've talked about this at length. Everybody's got this wall. Here I am with Ramona. Ramona's got a wall. I've got a wall. Can I care enough to understand where Ramona is? Can Ramona care enough to understand where I am? That's what brings down our wall. 40% of our cooperation is held back, even in a loving, committed relationship. You can imagine how much is being held back in every other kind of relationship. So we want to get past this wall. It's holding back everything we need to connect with this person. We've talked about we can throw up on their wall. It splashes back, tastes awful, rejection. We can use a sledgehammer to try to break it down. That just creates strength. The person just fortifies their wall. Or we can practice intrinsic validation. Those are our options. And intrinsic validation has a few very simple steps. Step number one, I'm going to notice the person. We can imagine if I've got a respectful that's orange, that has me over-focus on how they appear, can I notice their pricelessness? Can I see it? We want to start noticing what is important to this person. Notice them. Notice what's important to the person. This is that red flag, green flag game that we can play. You can read about that and listen to it in your studio, where I'm looking for the good in people for a week and biting my tongue, not saying anything negative. I'm looking for what's important. There's a story about the waiter that had the pencil thin mustache and beard. There's a story about the gentleman with the tattoo. Can we see what's important to that person? With this hint, it most likely won't be important to us. But this isn't about us. Can we see what's important to them? Can we stand on their path, empathy, and see what's important to them? We want to start practicing this at a very high level. And when we see it, we're going to want to verbalize it. And we're going to want to know that we're not being fake or phony. This is called awareness. This is awareness. We're finally choosing to be aware. See it, verbalize it. That's step number one. Notice. The next series of steps is all about caring and feeling. Caring and feeling. We're going to move into a deeper sense of connection. We're going to start listening. And we'd like to use the word listening for doors. I want you to picture everyone with a big fortress around them and a big iron door, big oak door on iron hinges, if you can see that, big thick door. And as human beings, we telescope what we're thinking. I've had a bad day. I'm so frustrated. And you and I both know we must always respond, me too. Yeah, I woke up this morning at 3 o'clock, didn't sleep very well. Our conversations are all about ourselves, what we've done, what we've felt, what we've experienced. Intrinsic validation demands that we listen to somebody else's conversation. And we simply respond with the phrase, example, tell me more about that. Share with me what you're thinking. What happened? We care about them. And if we will do this, most people will take us by the hand and take us right into their world. No sledgehammer needed. No throw-up needed. Just caring enough to listen. I was just in a coaching session a few moments ago. And someone was doing a presentation with their network marketing company and talked about mentally rehearsing and practicing this and caring to listen. And what happened? It's miraculous. Cared enough to step in the person's world. Didn't come to sell them. Didn't have this big agenda. Came to connect, to listen. Listened. Heard. Well, tell me more about that. Well, share with me what happened. Now we're inside their world. Next step is to create, next step is to be safe. Be safe. Be safe. When we listen as human beings, almost all of us listen to respond. We're formulating our answers while somebody else is speaking. A great listener just listens. And when the person gets done talking, they just lean in. It's like, do you have anything else you want to share? Is there more to be said? You might even count 1-1000, 2-1000, 3-1000. Now, I've shared this before. You've read it before. This is a hard thing to do if you're a fixer. If you like to give advice, you like to solve problems, to just listen. And when they're done, not to jump in. You do this for a few times, and that's you're being safe. You watch the person's mind downshift and keep sharing. It's like, this is safe. I can talk. Okay. You watch people open up quickly when they feel they're safe. So that's your next objective, is to be safe. Next objective is to create a safe place. We create a safe place because as we listen, we begin to understand where they are. We demonstrate that we understand by asking empathetic questions. Well, do you ever want to take that copy machine and just throw it out of the third floor window? Oh, yeah. We understand long before they know that we understand. The fact that we understand where a person is of little value until they know that we know. And we demonstrate that we know, not by saying, oh, I know what you're feeling, or I know where you've been. That's a cop-out. If we know, we'll know the question to ask. And if we don't know the question to ask, we better step a little deeper into their world till we fully understand. So creating a safe place is asking empathetic questions. These are questions that just boil up out of our experience. Where do these questions come from? They come from taking all of our life experience that's in that sack we've been dragging around, emptying the sack, and putting all those experiences in our hearts so they're right here as a ready reference. They're in a sack. We won't have access to them. But right here in our heart, oh my goodness, I know what that feels like. That was suffocating when that happened to me. And we're inspired to ask a question. It just floats to the surface. Because we cared enough to take our experiences, let go of shame and blame, and wanting other people to feel sorry for us, our victimhood, we've just taken it and engraved it right here in our heart, and it's readily available for us to use as we're listening, as we're beginning to understand, oh, I wonder if. And we ask that I wonder if question. That demonstrates that we know where they are. And when they know that we know where they are, we didn't try to fix them. We created a safe place. Now, we're safe. Safe place. Questions rhetorical. Any need for a wall? And the answer is no. No more need for a wall. And that's when someone really opens up. Now, I want you to adopt a philosophy that right now is a line of demarcation. This is the first half of intrinsic validation, and it could be the entire intrinsic validating experience. If we have come to make a friend, that's been our objective. That's our agenda, to make a friend. We may have done all that was necessary to create a friend. And we could simply end the conversation by giving them a hug or giving them a handshake and say, thank you so much for sharing. I wish the very best in your life. The gift we give a person, the greatest gift, I say this every time I'm in intrinsic validation, and every time I deal with this, it's just a glaring problem. We think the gift is our advice, our solutions. We think the gift is us fixing their problems. That is not the gift. The gift is the gift of them feeling understood. That's the greatest gift we give. It's not the only gift we may give, but it's the greatest gift. And if we've given the gift of them feeling understood, we can end the task right there. We're done. Now, we're at a new moment of decision. That's what we want to say, new moment of decision. this new moment of decision, we're going to ask ourselves, well, I've learned a lot about this person. Learned a lot. Is there anything that I've learned about them for which I have a solution? One that would serve them, truly serve them. It's a new moment of decision. We haven't even decided if we want to share something till we know they need it, and it looks like they might be open to it. This takes all the pressure off of us as a salesperson, all the pressure off of us in a conversation. We're not coming to fix. We're coming to understand and then have them feel understood. That's it. Once that's happened, now we're in a new moment of decision. And if we feel strongly that we have something that would bless their lives, we move to the next phase, which is timing. Let's write down timing. Is this the right time? Is this enough for today? Should we come back tomorrow with a solution? Or should we ask for permission to share it right now? If it is the right time, or when it is the right time, the last piece of intrinsic validation is called inviting. We're going to seek permission to invite them. We're going to invite them into our world. And it sounds like this. You shared with me this and this and this. Thank you. You know, I think I might have a solution that would serve you. Would you be open to a suggestion or to an idea? If they say yes, proceed. If they say no, stop. It's not their time. Don't push forward. Look, dang it, I've spent 30 minutes stepping into your world and hearing all your sob stories. Now it's my turn to tell you your solution, so shut up. We just can't go there. But if they say yes, it's as if we're taking them by the arm, walking out of their world and into ours. Then we pull out of our briefcase, called our agenda, and we share only that which they need to hear. Only that which they need to hear. This is when we tell our story. This is when we share our passion, our excitement. Now, they may have an objection. The better we get at intrinsic validation, the more we anticipate what those might be, and we'll ask them questions about it. How do you feel about being a salesperson? How do you feel about talking to people? Oh, tell me more about that. What experience have you had? What happened during that experience? Wow. You ever felt like it might have held you back from experiences in your life because of that fear? Yeah. How long do you want to hang on to it? I don't. Okay. And you move on. You will have answered all those objections before you get to them. But if you get to this point where you're inviting them into your world and they've got an objection, just know this. An objection is rarely stated as a question. We answer questions. But it's not a question. So we don't answer objections. Objections are generally stated as a statement, and it demands a question. Somebody gives us an objection, the very first thing we want to do is step back into their world with a question. Well, share with me your experience. Tell me more about your challenge. It's been my experience that if we care enough to handle an objection by stepping back into their world, it can generally be resolved in the conversation. These are smart people. They know. And when the time comes, we're going to do what some people call a close. But the close is to invite them to begin. Unless you're selling toilet paper or firecrackers, you got a relationship sale. You're selling a car, inviting someone to join you in a business. You're selling something else, or whatever the case may be, that it sounds like this. Are you ready to get started? Are you ready to get started? I'm not going to close you and leave. I'm going to begin a new relationship with you. Now, this is really critical. A week ago, I got a notification from my insurance company that a very large insurance policy was renewing on the 28th of March for five times the premium I was currently paying, actually a little bit more than that. And I went, wow, I'd forgotten all about that. And then I realized my insurance agent has not talked to me since the day I signed and inked that document. 10 years. 10 years I haven't heard from him. Not a birthday card, not a phone call, not a 6 months from now, this is going to be renewing, let's plan ahead. Nothing. Nothing. Do you think I want to do business with him again? The answer is no. He closed me. He got his commission, and he was off to the next sale. He didn't give a dang about me. Now that the policy is being terminated, I can't. I've got the second phone call from him in 2 days. I just held up the message so Ramona could see it. Yeah. Oh, now he's going to talk to me. You know, now he's going to lose his policy and the commissions and renewals. And well, we want to be in relationship selling. I don't want to just close you. Are you ready to get started in a relationship with me? What does that take? Well, the first thing we're going to do is this, and the second thing we're going to want to do this. It's a very natural, wonderful process when we have cared enough about a person to notice them, care about them, and feel what they're feeling. Be safe. Create a safe place. Have those walls come down. Be in that new moment of decision. If there's something we can share, is this the right time? Invite them into your world and share. Objection comes up. It's not a question. It's a statement. Ask a question. When you're ready and they're ready, then you ask them to begin. You should never have to be chasing someone. If you're chasing someone, they're most likely running, and it's probably because we didn't get to the real issue. We didn't get to it. There was an elephant in the room, and nobody wanted to talk about it. Talk about the elephants in the room. It takes down walls, creates incredible relationships. And lastly, in our discussion tonight, there'll be times when you step into someone's world and they're a rattlesnake. They're just flat out a rattlesnake. You do not put rattlesnakes in your sleeping bag because they will bite you. Intrinsic validation is caring enough about a person to step in their world and get clear about where they are until they feel understood. And then sharing if it's appropriate. It's that simple. Now, some people say this takes a long time. And I go, I haven't got 30 minutes to intrinsically validate someone, but somehow we have 6 months to chase them. Isn't that interesting? We're in damage control for 6 months. But we didn't have 30 minutes up front to step in the world and care enough about them to find out this information up front. This is not about creating rapport. This is caring enough to find out where they really are. Because when we have when we are safe and create a safe place, what is developed is trust. And as Stephen M. R. Covey said in his book, The Speed of Trust, when trust is high, speed is fast, and costs are low. If we have not created that trust, all we want to create rapport is so we get to the issues and get to the stuff and close it. Trust is low, speed is slow, and costs are high. I'll encourage you not to shortcut this process. I've intrinsically validated someone in 10 minutes. It's by being present and listening and feeling the right question to ask. I watched Ramona do this with a neighbor up at our cabin who filed a lawsuit because of the noise last summer at the cabin. Yeah, it's a cabin. It's by a lake. I mean, people are going to be noisy. And we have permission from his attorney just to go stop by and talk to him. And we sat down and stepped into his world. His first comment was, I don't know if this is any value at all, but I'll go through the process with you. I said, great, just share with me what you're going through. He gave us a demand list of 10 things. We started going through each one of them. We got down to this one point, and Ramona said, gosh, what would you think if we sent them down to the city park when they want to do that? She did not know that had been his request the previous summer to our property manager. And I watched his countenance shift, and the paper came down to the table. And he looked over at Ramona and said, I think we might be able to work something out. We went from lawsuit, anger, to what is now two of our dear friends. Weeks later, going through the process, two fun dear friends who'd filed a lawsuit, who withdrew it the next day because Ramona stepped into his world. She could feel something, and she spoke it. Why don't we just send him to the city park? Simple line. Sounds innocuous. But it was exactly where he was. He felt understood, and that's all it took. He felt understood, and it was all over. It was just a matter of figuring out solutions to problems. We worked on them all together. We're on the same team. And again, we're dear friends. This is a powerful concept. Og said it will melt all hearts, likened to the sun whose rays soften the coldest clay. And he gave us a timeline. It won't all be instant from one wise comment made by Ramona. Sometimes it takes longer, but it will melt all hearts if we care enough to step into a person's world and just listen. We teach these principles to high-level executives, to team leaders, to companions. In the highest levels of corporate America, these principles apply. When a CEO will listen with this kind of listening, there could have been terrible battles in an executive team. And when one of them applies these principles, they take down walls and that anger dissipates. And everybody feels understood. And now all kinds of compromise and discussion can occur. This is such a powerful process. I just hope that you'll have the courage tonight to know you're looking at a person in terms of their pricelessness, their appearance and possessions and accomplishments. You're looking at them in terms of belief systems. You're looking at them in terms of dangerous belief systems or harmful production or productivity that's down or challenges in their life. We're looking at people. Just take a look at those measurements and say, wow, how are these things getting in my way? And would it serve me to practice agape love, this heightened level of awareness, stand on their path with this intuition, and take down their walls of resistance with these very simple steps? Well, our session is over. Wow, time has flown tonight. Any questions or comments about how to apply these principles? Anything I can do to serve anyone tonight? Okay, let's go do this with increased level of intention this week. Let's find the joy that comes when we actually care enough to do this. The peace that it can bring into our life and the lives of others. Thanks, everyone. And we'll be back with you next week, because next week we're going to get the process of going into mental creation. We're going to spend just a little time on fantasy and catastrophe, but I want to start working on some mental rehearsal. I'd actually like somebody to come out with something they're working on. We did this with a group last week, and we mentally rehearsed this presentation at the spa. And interestingly enough, in the exercise we did in the coaching session, we came up with a whole bunch of issues that when the person went and stepped into the spa owner's world, those were the very questions that came up. We want to, in mental rehearsal, learn how to mental rehearse something that's very positive and something that could be very challenging. And then positive, challenging, positive, challenging. I want to send you out after the next couple of sessions using your mind constructively so that you can be igniting passion and driving focus and discipline, effort, and action instead of being in discouragement and frustration and overwhelm. So practice these principles this week, because these we want to have in place so that when we're mentally rehearsing, it is about how to intrinsically validate. And then we're going to want to go and exercise that actual process that we've been mentally rehearsing. We're going to mentally rehearse, seek inspiration, exploration, planning, and goal setting. But our call next week, if someone comes out and we're able to work on it, I'm okay if we spend the entire session on a specific example of mental rehearsal so you all can feel how to exercise this muscle. I want you eventually thinking this way, just thinking this way all the time. Well, thanks, everybody. Have a great night. We'll be back with you next Tuesday. Good night, everyone.